Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Shamanic Astrology Mystery School's regular monthly membership call. Today is August 30th, 2018, and my name is Eric Roth. I'm the Managing Director of SAMS, as well as a Shamanic Astrologer and part-time facilitator with online courses and other events. We're here with Mary Kern, who's a member of the Board of the Executive Council or the Board of Directors, and she's here filling in for the two regulars, Kaylin and Daniel, who are normally here, one or the other, but they can't because they are both in Ireland right now doing a Renaissance of the Sacred Pheromone event, which is going to go on for another week or so. So we're going to be focusing today on the month of September, the astrological and astronomical happenings, and the scope of what that entails. We're going to be bringing in some information around that during this particular call. And then at the end of the call, we have Q&A time for maybe 10 minutes or so, sometimes 15 minutes, depending on the number of questions that are coming in. But I'd like to start by just going over a few things that the school is going to be coming up here, events and classes and so forth. I think that the first one that's really big is, Mary, do you want to talk about that? There's a class at the end of October.
Yes. This is co-creating with the elements, and I'm actually part of that. This is really the first time we've ever done anything like this, where we're presenting the elements. There's actually four presenters, and it's in a wonderful location. This is being held from October 26th to the 28th at the University of Earth up on the Feather River. And you can find it on our website, shamanicastrology.com. It is a 2.5-day event that's full, chock full, of getting a sound foundation for understanding the 12 archetypes. And this is fundamental to learning shamanic astrology and just to understand how to make your life work better, how to integrate the elements that are working within you at any given moment, and just doing the research that I did to develop the curriculum brought me some just amazing insights into how these are balanced within us and how we experience them in the outer world as well. So I heartfully invite you to come on up and enjoy beautiful cabins in a beautiful wooded setting with mountains and the whole thing, night sky included, no extra charge.
Yes, thank you. And we've got two more teleclasses coming up in the fall, one in October on the lunar nodes, which are shifting, ingressing, as they say in astrology, into the signs of Capricorn and Cancer. And then that's October 6th, I believe. And then in November, we have a teleclass that's been a running teleclass theme for us for the past 5 years now, 6 years, where we're doing the next one on the Jupiter series. So this will be when Jupiter moves into Sagittarius. And so we're going to be focused on that. That's Daniel Giamara and Kaylin Castell. We'll be hosting both of those teleclasses. And then we've got two major events in Arizona. One that is called the Evolving Shamanic Astrology Paradigm, which was once known as the Advanced Chart Analysis. That is in Tucson, Arizona, and that's between February 23rd and 27th. And then the second one, between March 1st and 3rd of 2019, will be at Sahuarita at Gail Tilson's place, and It's going to be a cosmology night sky event, and that's the perfect location to go out and see the stars and really tune into that, because that's where the bulk of the teachings will be, is about that night sky. So we're really excited,
Eric?
About, yes.
Oh, I want people to know that this is a very unique opportunity to get to meet Daniel and work with him in person, since he'll be coming here from the Philippines, and that makes it really special.
Yes, for sure. So he comes here about once a year, so you'll get an opportunity to be there in person with him as he facilitates and talks. So a really special time there in both of those events. So why don't we get started with reviewing what this month is all about, also highlighting what's visible in the sky and planetary-wise, and really giving you a real indication about what's really happening. And just for those of you that are new to membership calls like this, what we tend to do is go over what's taking place in the astrology arena, as well as astronomical, which there's definitely a blurring of lines between those two, since they originated. They were the same thing thousands of years ago, and it was only in the last few centuries that there was a separation between these two fields of study. Let's begin by talking about some of the highlights that were mentioned in the email. So there's two planets that are going to be going direct this month, Saturn and Pluto. Venus will be moving into another conjunction with the Moon, and it's part of a series of conjunctions that goes into a deeper level of working with the feminine, and this is what we call Venus Gate. And anytime that, with certain exceptions, anytime Venus and the Moon are conjunct, it's typically called a Venus Gate on some level, whether it's Venus is in the evening sky or in the morning sky. And other highlights is Mars and Uranus are in their third square of the series this year, and Mars in the South Node, third conjunction in the series this year. There are other major items here. Venus and Spica are going to be kicking things off here in our conversation when we run down the calendar. There's other major stuff that we're gonna bring up for sure here, but let's talk about what's visible right now. And the evening sky is the time where you're really gonna notice, obviously, the planet. Mercury is in the morning sky. It's not as visible. It's usually, this is a planet that's relatively difficult to see. It depends on your, how much of a horizon you can see and how much, humidity might be in the air or cloud cover. So a lot of different variables around that, but Mercury is the more challenging of the visible planets to take in. But in the evening sky, we've got four visible planets right after sunset. Mm-hmm. Venus, Mars, Jupiter, and Saturn, all of them. And, Mary, did you have a comment?
Oh, no, I'm just saying I have really enjoyed looking up there and seeing them. They've been so visible this last month. Mm-hmm.
Oh, my gosh, yes. I've been really watching this as well when I am able to. And one of the great teaching tools of the night sky is when you get to see this number of planets across the sky, and it's basically tracing roughly the path of the sun.
Yeah.
So when the sun is traveling through the sky, that through those areas of the sky, that it's basically walking across the plane of the solar system where the planets are, from a Earth perspective. So you're standing on Earth or sitting on Earth, and you're looking up and you're seeing this. It's what we call geocentric. And so that's what when you're looking at that, it's pretty spectacular. Venus starts out the month in closest to the sign of the four planets I mentioned, at minus 4.62 in brightness. And so the lower the number, the brighter it is. So the negative numbers that I'm mentioning are the brightest. The ones that have a plus in front of them are not as bright. And if you get higher in the scale, that's basically at the limit of human eyesight. But on September 30th, Venus will still be near its brightest this year at minus 4.75. And so Venus is definitely outshining any of the other planets and is always the brightest planet for us to see from Earth. Mars, which is furthest away from Venus and these four planets, that starts out the month having dimmed a bit at to minus 2.1. It's still very bright. Anytime you get over minus 2 or above, you're in the very bright territory. And then at September 30th, it's minus 1.3. So it really dims significantly in the month of September. And it starts out the month still brighter than Jupiter and has been brighter than Jupiter for a few months now. Jupiter starts out the month at minus 1.92, but then it doesn't dim as much as Mars does. As Earth peels away from Mars in its orbit, Jupiter is still very large enough to be highly bright to our eyes. So it only dims to minus 1.8 on September 30th. And then Saturn, the farthest planet that we can see with the naked eye, generally speaking, Uranus, you can see it during certain times in its orbit, but it's extremely dim and at the limit of our eyesight. But Saturn, of course, kind of marks that limit, that boundary, and why a big reason why it earned a lot of its the growth through limits and boundaries, all of that passage. That's why it continues to be perceived as such, because it's our visible relationship, our connection experientially with the planet. So Saturn starts out the month at plus 0.37, and it ends the month on September 30th at plus 0.49. And those are the visible planets that are going on. I will speak just briefly about Mercury, in that Mercury is going to be technically visible for about the first 9 days in the morning sky, but then the rest of the month it disappears in what we call the underworld. When any planet that's within the glare of the sun, it's considered invisible in the hidden realm with great mystery, and so that's where Mercury will be for the rest of that month. So why don't we talk about Mary? Did you have any thoughts about the visible planets?
Well, I just wanted to say, if you're just starting to go out and look, what's really special about Mars right now, though it's been really bright, it's also been extra red. And it's almost like a little ruby in the sky, really, when you're looking up there. So if you're seeing those bright objects on the ecliptic and you're wondering which one is which, the red one is Mars. It's closest to where the sun comes up when they're all up there in their array. But, yeah.
Thank you. So the first day of the month is, really what kicks off the month, and that's just coming up in a few days, and that's Venus and Spica. So Spica is a star in the constellation of the Priestess, and it's one of the the few major stars in brightness that is along the path of the sun, that is like almost smack dab on the ecliptic. itself, which is the ecliptic means it's the path of the sun, the area where we have eclipses, lunar and solar eclipses. So Spica sits at 24 degrees Libra. So each sign has 30 degrees in it. As this is not the constellational degrees, this is the sign degrees, so the essence of the sign itself, which happens to be, the priestess happens to be located within a big portion of the sign of Libra. And so that Venus and Spica. And Spica is at a plus 1.0 magnitude and, you know, really easily visible once the sun starts really dimming below the horizon. And Venus takes a while to set after the sun sets because she's near her maximum, what we call maximum elongation, the distance from the sun. And so with that said, you definitely want to take a look and tune into that that sea. So Venus will be the bright planet below that star Spica, and Spica is the regular stand-in for what Venus typically represents, which is the feminine principle. So when Venus is disappeared, behind the glare of the sun or in front of the sun, Spica is usually the one that represents the feminine, this is a star that goes back to really long, many thousands of years, and she's stands for the sheaf of wheat or a grain, and that's the goddess holding that grain, and the image of sacredness of harvest of grounding the gifts of earth into the world. And the whole apparatus around the patterning of the earth, the being able to recognize the sacred passage of the seasons, and the priestess is the one that is the first and foremost honoring that passage. And so this is Spica is a really important star in all of this, and so I definitely would share with you to tune into that star with Venus and especially if you're tuning into the various especially the Venus cycle itself, both of those are feminine, and there's some really powerful meaning. And she's Venus right now is what we call in the ascent. That means she's after going through the underworld earlier at the at the end of last year, the beginning of this year, She's now at her essentially her brightest point, her highest point, really embodying her power. And to come into her power with Spica is essentially just makes it much more expansive than that feminine power, feminine principle. So she's in her prominence right now, traveling to a place where she's going to be and going through metamorphosis, which Mary, you can definitely share when we get down to the Venus Moon Gate. So that's the first. And what between the first and the fifth, there, Mary, did you have something that you wanted to share about any of those dates?
I did. I wanted to share that from September 1st to the 8th, that first week of September, Mercury is with the star Regulus. And mm-hmm. Regulus is located at the heart of a lion in the lion constellation. It's one of the four royal stars, and its name has a lot of regalness. It comes from a Latin derivative of rex, meaning king, and from the Greek name, also meaning little king. Regulus is in the lion constellation, representing the royal king or queen of beasts. And as it is the heart star, it reminds us of the importance of self-love, self-confidence, self-respect, and all of this is needed to lead, to rule, and to move forward in a really just and fair and moral way at this time. The word Regulus is intriguing because we have many English words that are associated directly with it. Rectus, those straight muscles on the thigh and abdomen that keep us upright and straight so we can move forward. Words like regime and region, those are both areas of rulerships. And even Regulus is related to reign, Raja, and to regulate. So it's just, it's a big statement having it there for so long and reminding us of something that's really important right now as we're coming into our fuller self and really claiming that part of ourself. So in terms of those that first week, I guess the other thing I'd say is September 2nd is made extra special for me because Aldebaran is occulting the moon for the 49th time, the final time in a series of 49 occultations that began back all the way back to January of 2015. And I'm saying it's extra special for me because September 2nd is my birthday. So I'm getting a double celebration. Aldebaran marks the eye of the constellation of the bull, and it represents Archangel Michael, the watcher of the east and the marker of the vernal equinox. So there's just a lot of sacredness in all of this. Aldebaran has been called the key to the Silver Gate, giving access to even greater mysteries there. It's like a stargate aligned with the galactic edge. And with the moon occulting it, it implies its transmissions are more and more amplified with each of these 49 occultations. So something really wonderful is coming to fruition, I would say, on that day. And I would ask you, what transmissions are coming into us literally from the edge of our galaxy at this time? And how is this reforming us and quickening our evolutionary process? So that's that very first week up to September 6th, when Saturn is stationing direct in the evening sky.
Yeah, thank you. And just a note that Regulus, not too long ago, a few years back, I think it was 2011 or 2012, where the star actually moved into the sign of Virgo. Mm-hmm. It became, that kind of transitioned into a whole new energetic, archetypal energy, which is a boundary that a lot of people had saw coming and, you know, was a marking of a new age. So that's one way to measure, you know, a boundary of one age to another is when a particular star or constellation moves into, a different part of the seasonal energy, which Regulus did. Mercury moved into Virgo, as you mentioned, it's going through there, and of course it moved in there on September 5th, and then of course Saturn stationed direct, and stationed direct at 2 degrees, 32 minutes Capricorn. So Saturn doesn't really move much this month. It starts the month retrograde at 2:33 Capricorn. It only moves about a half degree at the end. It's at 3 degrees, 2 minutes Capricorn. So Saturn has been hanging around the recently in the galactic center area. I mean, it's about a handful of degrees away. It's an area of the sky that's what we call the galactic bulge, the center of the galaxy, mm-hmm. where the supermassive black hole is. And so this is this part of the sky has definitely been on active duty recently with Saturn also, as I'll talk about here in just a moment, Vesta being over there. In fact, on September 7th, Vesta is exact on the galactic center at 27 degrees Sagittarius. And that's what we know as the Golden Gate, where souls travel to go and to enter their next life, perhaps in whatever way or shape or form that may come out as or result as. Also on the 7th, Neptune is in opposition to the Sun, and what we mean by that is that when opposition essentially is like a full moon, that when one object sets, another object is rising on the opposite end of the sky. So Neptune is rising when the sun is setting and vice versa. So that is happening at 15 degrees, 4 minutes, Virgo. And Neptune, Neptune starts the month, retrograde at 15:15, and then it ends the month at 14.5 degrees, all in Pisces. And then we have on the 9th, Venus moves into Scorpio, which this is really interesting because this is the sign that will mark a certain stellar territory that is tuned into what we call the next heliacal rise. And it's actually only going to be in Scorpio for a little while before it retrogrades back into the sign of Libra, where it will be noticed in its heliacal rise in October. So that is a little over a month away. I mean, a little over 2 months away before the heliacal rise, but it'll be going retrograde in October. And that also marks the boundary of the when Mercury disappears in the underworld in the sign of Virgo, 719 Virgo. What I mean by that, it means it's within 10 degrees of the sun. So we've got the new moon also on the 9th. Mary, do you want to talk about the new moon?
Sure. Yes. It's a little special because it's reaching its closest position to the Earth, which magnifies its effect. We call this a perigee new moon. And Venus is also squaring Mars. At the same time, I believe, or really close to it, meaning that they're in view of each other in the sky. So anything else you want to say about the new moon, Eric?
It's new moons in our Virgo new moon, and, this is just, not too far away from Venus. And a sign and a half away, essentially, from where Venus is. And the new moons are always about new beginnings, new entry, new ways of starting things. And since it's in Virgo, this is there's a sacredness to this particular new moon, and a way of approaching whatever it is in your life and approaching it from a place of sacredness. A place of love, a place of honoring and reverence of life itself, and especially being tied to the rhythms and patterns of the seasons of Earth, and that could be a way for a person to really connect with that ceremonially.
I like to think of a new moon as a conception or a seed point.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really good to tune into that and really look at what it is you want to set your intentions around for this lunar month at the beginning.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. So then we have on, depending on where you are on the planet, sometimes these alignments actually take place a day before, a day after what we're sharing here. We're sharing Pacific time, when these events occur. So Just to note that. Then on the 11th of September, Mars enters Aquarius, and in some parts of the world that is on the 10th. So it all depends on where you're located. And it's, Mars is entering Aquarius for the second time this year. It entered back in mid-May. And
It was the 15th.
Yeah, so... Uh-huh. Yeah, so it's been, Mars has been in this sign, hanging in this region of the sky for a number of months now, and will continue for the next couple of months in this part of the sky, which is simply sitting between the Archer and the Goldfish constellations. So it's an area where the beginning of what we call the water constellations, and that starts with the goatfish or the sea goat, depending on one's perspective. And as Mars will enter that that area. It'll be staying in that area for a while. It's just barely getting going since it's gone direct just a few days ago, back on the 27th of August. So it's part of our overall rhythm, a cycle rhythm called the synodic cycle that began on July 26th. And this is a long cycle that goes, that is measured from Mars-Sun opposition to Mars-Sun opposition. And it's about a little over 26 months long before it, that alignment happens again. So Aquarius is the dominant sign, and so it marks what we call the overtone. So this is really a time of the masculine's relationship with Aquarius, between its balance and connection to really reforming its relationship with Mother Earth, and how does that apply to where does consciousness come in, and where does Earth come in, and the one between the light and the shadow of where Aquarius could be. This is something Daniel and I talked about in the Uranus and Taurus class, because Mars squares Uranus, a few times this year, and so that Taurus Aquarius relationship is really big right now in the consciousness of the Earth. Mm-hmm. And then we have the seventh gate.
I can go back one. I got one in between there. You want me to plug it in?
What is it? Do you have?
I just want to note that September 9th to the 11th is Rosh Hashanah, the Hebrew high holiday that celebrates their new year. And I think that's important because there's a lot of cultures that define the new moon as when it is the first visible tiny little crescent. And it's when this sliver sets closest to the September equinox that marks every year when Rosh Hashanah starts. So it's a memorable time for me because back in 2010, that's when I first met Daniel Jamario and Kaylin Castell at the Tree of Life in Patagonia, Arizona. I was studying and actually celebrating Rosh Hashanah with Dr. Gabriel Cousins, a famous healer and head of the Asean Church. So I learned a lot about the sky while I was there and about the Hebrew holidays that are so important at the beginning of their calendar, lunar year, every year in September. I guess the other thing that I just wanted to say about the importance of Mars in Aquarius is that this past synodic cycle that ended back in July, before July 26th, was in Sagittarius, where the Divine Feminine was exploring really truth, really reevaluating what truth is. And I think it's so beautiful that it's followed up by the overtone in Aquarius, where the Divine Feminine is sorting out what's happened in the patriarch and maybe how some of that doesn't need to go forward. And then coming into Aquarius is really exploring all the boundaries of consciousness of what could come in to make this a better world. I think it's really the collective story right now is so interesting to follow by watching the celestial sky. I really encourage people to do it because it makes life fuller and gives so much more value to the day-to-day existence.
Okay. Yeah, thank you. Yeah, absolutely.
What's your next date?
just to review, Mars began the month at 28:45 Capricorn. So it last month it dipped into Capricorn in the middle of that month, and then it is only in Capricorn for about 30 days. Because when it goes into back into Aquarius, September 11th, it'll be only about a month of time. But then it ends the month at 6:03 Aquarius. So it's moving really slowly. Mm-hmm. You'll begin to notice by the end of the month, certainly, that Mars has shifted, further, a little further east in its movement toward the other stars, the other stars of the goatfish, where it was when it was at opposition back in July. September 12th is Venus conjunct the Moon. This is the seventh day, and this happens at 2 degrees, 25 minutes Scorpio. And so this represents the crown chakra. It's something about the as I talked about before, the full empowerment, the full illumination of this Venus cycle coming into her own, the feminine, and this what was originally the Aries overtone, because she. And back in March of 2017, March 31st, she rose in the early morning sky, first visible in the sign of Aries, so just after the equinox time. And now she's going to be moving into a whole new feminine guise or metamorphosis, feminine archetype that'll be coming up, depending on where you live, October 31st or November 1st. Do you want to comment on the seventh gate, Mary?
Yes, I do. I've been following the gates and the practices that go along with this to really tune in to how you can clear your own energy centers and hopefully take them to a higher octave by doing that. I would say this is a great time to tune in and see if you have blocks to your divine connection and to ask, how can you strengthen your connection to Source? And what's needed to do that? Is forgiveness needed? Is there a bigger perspective, perhaps? But it's important that we really work to be clear vessels and to help bring in what's needed from our Source. So this is really a beautiful way of tuning in and being with that. I think I've really enjoyed this synodic cycle in Aries more than any other, because I don't have Aries as a dominant feature on my natal chart, and I really think I accessed a lot of what she represents by going through this overtone in Venus with her in Aries.
Yes. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
There, we've been kind of we haven't done a full look at the where the planets and other objects are moving from point to point. I just want to share a couple of them while we're talking here. As we mentioned, Mars and also Saturn, and we talked about Mercury a little bit. In shamanic astrology, we don't put too much attention on the asteroids except for Vesta, but I do want to share that we're going to be talking about Ceres, the dwarf planet / asteroid Ceres, or Ceres, in February. And that particular one began the month, this orbits between Mars and Jupiter with Vesta. And it began in Virgo, 2746 Virgo, and we'll end the month at 11:18 Libra. But it moves, why I want to mention this is because it moves into Libra on September 6th, so just a little over 2 weeks before the equinox. And as it's doing that, if you, advance time to the equinox point, you'll see that the sun will be with Ceres, only about 7 to 8 degrees away from the asteroid Ceres when it enters equinox, along with Mercury not too far from there as well. But I wanted to put some attention there because it's an asteroid, a dwarf planet, that has also a connection to the priestess constellation and the sacred feminine and the story of Persephone. So there is some energetic things that are happening in this particular Equinox coming up, which we're I'm kind of giving you a bit of a long preview there with that. But the next set of events, September 13th and 14th, as far as visibility goes, Jupiter and the Moon are going to be a bit conjunct at 1908 Scorpio. Jupiter has been really picking up steam and its forward movement and eventual approach into the sign of Sagittarius. But you won't, here in North America, we won't be able to see the exact conjunction because it happens in the daytime. So you'll get to see close visible alignments on the nights of the 13th and the 14th between Jupiter and the Moon in the Scales constellation. So Jupiter's zipping through in between the Zubin el-Janubi and Zubin el-Shamali, the Scales themselves, and making its way toward the Scorpion eventually by early November, late October, early November. So do you have anything on 15th or 16th?
Well, what I would say about Jupiter, since we were catching up with where it's traveling this month, on the 1st, it's found at 17 Scorpio, and it travels to 22 Scorpio by the end of September 30th. If you've got personal planets, angles, or nodes in Scorpio, Jupiter's been busy expanding enthusiasm in these areas of your chart. I actually have my Mars and my Ascendant there, so I've had fun feeling into the effects of Jupiter. And as the month begins, Jupiter is setting around 10:15 at night in the evening sky, and as the month closes, it's about 2 hours earlier, around 8:15 p.m., at least on the west coast of the United States, where I'm located. So,
in California.
My next event I've got at September 18th.
Yeah, so Saturn, there's Saturn conjunct the Moon on September 17th.
Okay.
That could be the 18th, I guess, if you're on the other side of the planet. 2:38 Capricorn. So as you'll notice, this is the Moon can make a really wonderful, measuring stick in that when you've got four visible planets and the Moon goes across the sky, the Moon can be a pointer to these particular planets to help you identify where they are located, starting with Venus, which we talked about on the 12th, and then the 17th. Moon and Saturn. That's the next planet over from Venus right now in the evening sky after sunset. So that's just a way for those that are new to the night sky and looking at and being able to navigate that territory. The Moon serves as a wonderful tool in observing and experiencing the night sky.
Mm-hmm.
So the 18th, what do you got?
I have Mars squaring Uranus at 1 Taurus at 4 o'clock in the morning Pacific time.
Yes. That's the third square. The third square that Mars and Uranus has done. And this is a really big deal. Very rare for Mars to have three squares or conjunctions or oppositions with a particular planet or star. Because Mars's retrograde is so rare of all the inner planets and all the planets really is the rarest of all. And so it doesn't happen all that often. And so the signs of Taurus and Aquarius, the consciousness and our physical senses on the planet, where Aquarius is not about any of the physical realm and Taurus is not about consciousness. And so those two are, there's some, you know, with a square, there's a tension. There's a an energetic, you know, that's like two walls coming together, and there's kind of a crisis point between the two. And, you know, this is about preparing for things that are unexpected. You know, maybe the masculine will go through an eruption, a shift in their own connection with Mother Earth, and being so much out into the left brain, which is where Aquarius typically is a lot of the time. And maybe one scenario would be getting closer and closer and in touch more with the Earth itself, and realizing that we don't need to leave our bodies, or we don't need to just be relying on technology, but that the physical form itself also has an important role to play in the human life, and being able to balance that out. So that's at 1 degree, 58 minutes, Aquarius and Taurus. And on the 17th as well, Vesta moves into Capricorn. And on the 19th, the moon, only 2 days after the moon reaches Saturn, it connects with Mars at 2 degrees, 13 minutes. Continuing that, that's still within range of the square. So the square isn't just for one particular day, the exact alignment. I would say it's several days over that period of time, because Mars is moving relatively slowly. So that whole effect is continuous. And then on the 20th, we have Mercury meeting the Sun on the other side of the Sun at 2801 Virgo. And this is this whole Mercury cycle. Mercury also has a cycle, and with what we call the psychopomp phase. I mentioned it earlier, it's the time when Mercury is moving from visibility in the morning sky to eventually the visibility in the evening sky. And it's basically on the other side of the Sun from Earth, which is why we can't see it. And then we've got equinox coming up after Mercury moves into Libra on the 21st. The equinox comes up, and that's on the 22nd or 23rd, depending on where you are on the globe. 22nd here in North America, but in Europe, most of Europe, I think it's pretty much the 23rd, and Asia as well. So for those of you in those parts of the world there.
Okay.
You want to mention something about the equinox?
Yeah, well, that, but I want to say something about Mercury with the Sun, because if you look at what they mean, it's just interesting. I think, you know, the Sun goes into Libra right after Mercury does, and they are hanging together. They're hanging tight. And Mercury with the Sun, to me, begs the question, what needs illuminating in regards to our perceptions, our communication, and our thinking, which is really what Mercury represents. So, again, it's this inner work. Libra represents consciousness and equal collaboration. So how can this energy be of service to harmonize our communication as we go forward? Libra is a major theme with Mercury and the Sun, and soon Venus is going to enter into this same space and begin her new cycle in the overtone of guess what? Libra. So I just, Libra is kind of the catchword coming into September and then following up in October. So in regard to the autumn equinox, this is the official beginning of autumn in the northern hemisphere, and of course the beginning of spring in the southern hemisphere. It's a time of equal balance between light and dark, when the day and night are generally the same length as the sun reaches zero Libra at 7:29 p.m., Pacific time. And I say generally because it's not exactly unless you're directly on the equator. And there's kind of a conundrum here that's kind of fun to take a look at, because you may stumble upon this. Where I live in Northern California, on Saturday, September 22nd, when the equinox point is exact here, The sun rises at 6:58 a.m. and sets at 7:07 p.m. So the length of the day is 12 hours and 8 minutes and 53 seconds there. So why isn't that exact? And it's for two reasons. There's 8 minutes and 53 seconds difference there. The reasons are, one, the way we define sunrise and sunset, and two, there's atmospheric refraction of sunlight that changes these times or our perception of what's going on. And locations that are not on the equator do experience a day of equal day and night, but that day is called the equinox, and it's a few days before or after the actual equinox day. For Northern California, it's on September 25th, and locations closer to the equator would have their equinox a few days prior to September 22nd. Nonetheless, we celebrate together on September 22nd. And I would say this is a great time to do ceremony, and you can do it in a multitude of ways, but really, if you can take the time to do it, it's well worth doing. You can rise before dawn and observe the location of the sunrise at exactly due east, and then do the same thing when it sets, and it's at exact due west in the evening time, pretty much anywhere in the world. I gather with a group that meets pre-dawn and walks on a preserve to reach a beautiful point from which we view the sun as it breaks over the horizon. So even joining friends to honor this sunrise magnifies this experience. At this time in history, this fall equinox point at zero Libra is aligned with the center point of the galactic pole, an event that occurs for about 144 years during a 26,000-year cycle that's created by this tilt and wobble of our planet. Equality of night and day and the alignments that create it mark a portal between realms that can support you in manifesting dreams and intentions that you're bringing to it. So by observing the sunrise and sunset or by making an altar to honor this time of changing season, walking in nature, observing the colors of fall, the changes in temperatures and the plant life, or even journaling and just slowing down a bit as we start to move inward and prepare for winter. It's a personal love for me because it connects me with ancient times and ancient people who observe this day all over the world. I know we can't go on forever about the equinox, but I probably could for another half hour, so I'll let it go.
Yes. Thank you, Mary. That was really, thank you for sharing all of that. The main definition, I mean, this is, obviously we're under the impression that we get equal sunlight and equal night on that one day, but really where, astronomically speaking, it's when the sun crosses the equator, and it's in the northern hemisphere, it's when it's coming from the south to the north, and in the southern hemisphere, it's doing the opposite, and in a sense that the seasons are opposite. So as it's moving from south to north, we're in the northern hemisphere moving into less sunlight, but in the southern hemisphere, they're getting more sunlight, and so the seasons are flipped in that, and that can bring up all kinds of other questions, but we can just leave it there for now, since we're starting to run out of time here. We have a full moon on the 25th, and the 25th is also a big day for a couple of other things. There's a full moon on 2 degrees Aries, so Aries full moon. This is a harvest moon. The first full moon after or nearest the equinox point. Autumnal equinox point here in the northern hemisphere is the harvest moon,
or called the corn moon. I think
right.
It's got a few other names too. Uh-huh.
Sure. Chiron ingresses back into Pisces, It began the month at 105 Aries and will end the month at 2945 Pisces, but it's been in Aries since it moved into Aries April 17th. So it's, Chiron has stayed a lot of months in Aries, but now it's taking one last dip into Pisces for a few more months, and then it comes back out into Aries for good for over six more years. just to say that the other thing that is happening on that particular day, Mars reaches its original degree of opposition where it was in July 26th at 4:08 Aquarius. And at the same time, Mars and the south node of the moon are also conjunct at 4:10 Aquarius. So it's within 2 minutes. It's essentially the same time. It's the third time this year that the moon, the lunar south lunar node and Mars are conjunct. So that's something too. That could be a really special day with all of that activity between the full moon and what's happening with Mars and Chiron's ingress back into Pisces.
And it's actually Equinox point too, isn't it? I mean, the eclipse point as well. That's
right.
Yeah.
Yes. So also, there's one other thing. Venus reaches its maximum magnitude for the year at -4.78, at almost -4.8. So it's really, really bright. The brightest it can get is -4.9 or -5, roughly in that area. But at this particular stage, it only gets at that -4.78.
On September 24th.
Yes, or 25th, depending on where you are. Saturn also squares the Sun on the 25th. So we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, about 6 things that all happen on and around the 25th or 24th. Saturn is squaring the Sun, Saturn at 2:51, Capricorn, the Sun at 2:51, Libra. The last thing that happens this month of September 2018 is Pluto stationing direct at 18:45 on the 29th of September. In other parts of the world, it would be the 30th. And Pluto doesn't move very much at all this month. It began the month at 18 degrees, 58 minutes, Capricorn, and it ends at 18:45, so a scant one fifth of a degree, essentially, that Pluto has moved. So it really is focused on where it is in the high 18 degree to 19 degree range right now, and then it won't even move very much at all, even in October as well. But Pluto in general is slowing down. As it's moving into signs where it spends more time in more years, it's moving into a part of its orbit that is longer. So it's moving away farther away from the Sun and from Earth.
Okay. I have one other thing. September 27th to the 29th. Just want to point out, if you're out there looking at the night sky, that Venus and Jupiter are found within 14 degrees of one another during those days. But they're not actually going to meet up until after Venus goes retrograde. And then there will be a meeting between Venus and Jupiter in the October sky.
Yeah, thank you. I think they get to about the closest they get is to about 11 degrees within each other, 11 to 12 degrees. Mm-hmm. And that's at the end of this month, as you mentioned, is the very beginning of maybe the first day or two of October. But that's, that when you're seeing Venus catch up and then it doesn't meet it. So it's going to be a long while before Venus, after it goes through its retrograde period, catches up again with Jupiter. Which did you see when that actually takes place, Mary?
I did not look that far forward, but I would
say
that when we're looking at the end of the month, that's about holding your arm length out and looking at the width of your fist, which is considered about that number of degrees So that kind of helps you locate that. And wow, this has been fun. It's my maiden voyage, getting to talk to our beautiful members. And
yes.
I so appreciate every one of them. I do want to note that the date for that Mars Aquarius teleclass, I believe, is October 2nd, not the 6th. So if you put it on your calendar, be sure and be watching for the sign up for that, because I think you're not going to want to miss it. I know I'm not. And
I was referring to the node class is October
6th. Oh, gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay.
But the Mars Aquarius class is October 2nd.
Perfect.
Yeah. We may change that depending on our schedules, but that's what we've got down right now. And stay tuned for any more announcements around that.
All right.
All right. So we've got about, because we started a bit late, so we have a few minutes to answer a few questions. And I'll go ahead and shift this to Q&A. So you can hit star 6 to ask a question. So feel free to do that. So we'll give it a few moments there. So yeah, it's a pretty busy month here. It looks like Emma. Emma,
hi.
You're with us.
Hi, Emma.
I just want to say this was so, so wonderful, and I'm so glad I listened in live instead of waiting for the recording. Mary, you did a wonderful job.
Emma, thank you, sweetheart. I really appreciate that so much.
Now, I've got a number of points where I have to go back and listen to the tape because I couldn't write my notes fast enough. And my subconscious says, okay, I got that. And I said, yeah, but the conscious mind doesn't have it. anyway, I wanted to share something here, that this is a very important month for me. One of the big things here is Mercury going direct on the 18th of Capricorn, on the end of the month, and now not coming back over this point again. My Mars is at 16 degrees Capricorn, and my Jupiter is at 18 degrees Libra. So what Mars has been doing the last few years, which has been sort of subtle and yet not subtle in the background, is stimulating back and forth with that square energy between conjuncting Mars and squaring Jupiter. And to where this last year has been all kinds of crisis and ups and downs, but everything ends up having a silver lining.
Wow.
it's sort of like learning the Pluto thing about how do you describe surrender? You don't know what surrender is until you actually have to do it. And
yep.
It's basically been a surrender to love and trust.
Aww.
So, and if I hadn't have been part of this school, I wouldn't know what was going on with me. I wouldn't be able to have the opportunity to take advantage of this beautiful energy that's occurring between the sky and myself and just be in confusion.
Wow.
So, thank you so much for bringing this to us, and it was a wonderful evening. And I'll close up here and let somebody else ask their question or whatever they want.
Thank you, Emma. It's just so nice to hear your voice, and I love your input.
Hey, Mary, I'm going to try to send you an email because there's some other stuff I want to share with you.
Well, I got something I want to send you too.
I have your email address.
I think
anyway.
You do. I'll look for it.
Okay. Bye-bye.
All right. Gail, you are here.
I am. I'm here. And enjoying, enjoying listening to the two of you. Kudos to both of you. Thank you for stepping up and doing, doing a beautiful job of it. Yes.
Thank you.
Great.
Thank you.
Mary offering what the, you know, really bringing the sacred part about the new moon, the full moon, the equinox, you know, honoring these timings. It's beautiful. I've been really enjoying the four planets in the night sky. There's been some nights when we didn't have clouds, and you know, because it has been the monsoon, but kind of off and on, times when I could go outside and just be crystal clear and see those beautiful planets. Amazing time.
I can remember what it's like to stand outside of your house and do that. I love it. I'm so glad we're going to do that again.
Yes, I look forward to seeing everybody. Indeed, yes. And talking about Ceres, my favorite little dwarf planet, the planet that became known as a dwarf planet at the same time as Pluto became known as a dwarf planet. Yeah.
Yeah. So, Gail, you're going to be talking about Ceres at the event in Tucson.
Yes, I am. Yes, I am. I honored that request. It was my Ceres return year, so I guess it was time.
Yeah, because, you know, every 23 years, Ceres has a repeats its pattern, and it comes back just about almost exact on the dot of where its original position was on our birthdays.
Yes, you know, just like you did with your Vesta synodic cycle presentation. I've got that here. I've been looking at it, you know, thinking about what I was going to offer with Ceres. But I have some really interesting connection with Ceres, and I'll look forward to sharing that with the group. Some very, very interesting. I mean, with my mom and dad and myself, and you know, the family connections.
Yeah. Oh, looking forward to that. It's exciting.
I notice that Ceres spends quite a time in a trine aspect to Mars. I mean, September, October, November, really, really, you know, within a few degrees of an exact trine and to Mars through November. You know, I can't help but think that, you know, there's some real action going on with the. There's going to be some real action going on with the mother principle, you know, with all this whole thing with the kids, you know, with the kids being put in cages, torn away from their parents. You know, this is really going to be front and center, one of the issues that comes out in this election cycle, and I think we're really going to hear from the mothers.
It's perfect that he made them all so angry, because now they will become a force, and they might not have done it if he hadn't. I mean, I know, you know, the intent of great mystery sometimes with the suffering of the little ones is to help, you know, the child will lead us, you know, and I think those children are leading us into our hearts and into a much better demand of what is okay and isn't okay.
Right, yeah. And so at this equinox time, as the sun moves into Libra and there's going to be Mercury and Ceres there, I think that it's a very good time to honor the Divine Mother and that connection with the mother and children, and pray for their being reconnected and us moving forward with integrity around this issue. I can only hope and pray, you know.
Gail, I see us all as being orphaned from the Divine Mother, because she was basically taken from us. And you know, at a collective level, I think that there's a bigger wound even there. I mean, another wound, maybe not a bigger wound, but we're healing that too, just by doing our astrology and by honoring these sacred timings. We are reconnecting with our mom, you know?
indeed. And Ceres has this, you know, with some literature, has that connection with Gaia. Because she did throw the earth into winter when Persephone was taken from her. So, I mean, there's this real big connection with the earth. And the opposition of Ceres to Chiron at the equinox, there's a whole big thing going on here. This is just another, it's an unfolding saga, continual.
It is. Is Ceres connected to Persephone's mom, Demeter, who is the goddess of
Mars? Same goddess, yeah.
Yeah.
Ah, yeah. I didn't know that. Ooh, this gets even more interesting.
It's just the Greek and the Roman names.
Perfect. Yeah, that's true. Okay, cool. Oh, Gail, we'll be stargazing again before we know it.
Yes.
Okay, mm-hmm. Thank you again for doing a great job with tonight's call. You too.
Thank you for your support.
Appreciate that, Gail. Thank you. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, we'll go ahead and close this out, and so we can just close out here. We're really thankful and grateful of being here and being able to share all this wonderful knowledge with the group and the contributions also from all of you. And we welcome more and looking forward to next time. Thank you all.
Thank you, thank you. Good night.
Good to be.
Yes, good night. Have a wonderful equinox. When
yes.
It gets.
Yes, indeed.
All right.
Bye.
All right. Good night.
Good night.
Eric?